To the Jungle. That was Guns N' Roses. Welcome to the Jungle, also known as the Phil Nason Show. It's a fine Monday afternoon, February the 18th, 2013. We've got a pretty good show planned for you today. Later on, Mrs. Debbie Wilson will be here to discuss her true crime memoir. Sweet Scent of Justice. And that's a crazy interview, man. She's a great lady. We had a lot of fun doing that, I'll tell you. But up first, it's Monday. And Monday, as you know, we talk New York Knicks basketball. And on the line with me from Australia, from BreakingTheBackboards.com, is Mr. Brent Kitchen. Brent, how are you today?
Yeah, I'm not too bad, Phil. It's right in the middle of the All-Star weekend, so that's cheered me up a little bit, especially after a pretty poor week by the Knicks.
Yeah, they were. They had a tough time, didn't they?
Yeah, it wasn't pretty. A couple of pretty bad losses in the Garden.
Yeah, that's not good. They lost, for those of you who don't know, they lost to the LA Clippers 102-88. And then they lost to the Toronto Raptors, 92-88. Lots to talk about today with the Knicks. You were saying something to me offline or off air that people are sometimes fans bother you because they're so fickle, especially when it comes to Carmelo Anthony and J.R. Smith. You want to talk about that today?
Yeah, well, I guess probably the frustration starting to build a little bit, because when the Knicks win, J.R. Smith and Carmelo Anthony seem to be the best players in the league, and everyone's saying Carmelo Anthony for MVP, all those types of things, and that's fine. But then, you know, with guys like J.R. Smith and Carmelo Anthony, you've got to take the good with the bad. There's going to be a lot of isolation. There's going to be a lot of shots put up on the offensive end. You can't all of a sudden when they go in just sit there and say, well, they're great players, and then when they have an off shooting night, turn around and say, well, we shouldn't be doing this, or the Knicks shouldn't be playing so much isolation. J.R. Smith shouldn't be putting up so many shots. Now, you've got to take the good with the bad. You've got to play the same way week in and week out. And I really don't like that, especially considering, in my opinion anyway, considering I think the Knicks are currently around top 8 or top 7 offensive team in the league. It's really the defense that's the concern, and that's probably what people should be worrying about, because that's what's, you know, really inconsistent on a nightly basis. You can't expel out and shoot over 50% every single night. It's not going to happen, especially with the type of players that JR and Carmelo tend to be on the court. So, like, I just want Knicks fans to take the good with the bad.
That makes sense. But apparently you can shoot over 50%. Ask LeBron James.
Apparently you can shoot at 75%.
Yeah, he's having an incredible year.
He certainly ramped up the MVP race recently, that's for sure. I think before that there was probably sort of, you know, the top four could be discussed with LeBron James, Kevin Durant, Carmelo Anthony, and Chris Paul, and probably what in this last two weeks, LeBron James has just taken it away. It's not in question anymore. I don't think it can be debated right now, and I can't see LeBron's game changing. I mean, we could see an unbelievable field goal percentage by him come the end of the season.
The other thing I'm thinking is this kid could wind up averaging a triple-double if he keeps it up.
Yeah, he's putting up some crazy numbers, and he's just impressive to watch at the moment. He's playing smarter than I've ever seen him play in his entire career. I probably spoke about last year. I was really impressed by the fact that, you know, he and improved his game and worked on it and did all those types of things. But after that, it was disappointing, you know, that he probably wasn't as consistent as what he could have been. And I think this season he's come out and really improved that.
Yes, he sure has. You know, I still remember Wilt Chamberlain. He averaged over 50 points a game and 25 rebounds a game for a season. And they were dogging him about hogging the ball, but yet he led the league in assists as well. So, I mean, you can't win. But LeBron's having a great year. But that really has nothing to do with the Knicks. The Knicks are, you know what I mean? The Knicks are, well, you know, when you bring up that issue with fans and they're talking about too much isolation and this and that, you know, in a way they have a point. The problem is that they don't express it very well. Perhaps they don't understand the nuances of the game. Or perhaps they got spoiled by the first month and a half of the season when you saw all that unselfish play and you saw the great ball movement. And you don't see that as much now because Carmelo realizes that he's got to score. And the best way for him to do that is in isolation. And that's a given. I mean, let's face it, that's his thing. And he's very good at it. The problem, and this is goes back to Jason Kidd. You know, Jason Kidd was probably the reason for much of the Knicks' success this year, at the beginning anyway, with the ball movement and this and that. But after he started having trouble with his back, and then Raymond Felton went out with a broken finger, they haven't played offense as efficiently in terms of moving the ball, have they? Like they did at the beginning?
Yeah, no, they definitely haven't. They haven't moved the ball as much. I mean, I think there was a nice balance between that isolation that we've come to expect with Carmelo Anthony, because like you say, that's what he's good at, and really moving the ball and getting open shots. And I don't think that Carmelo has really changed too much. He's probably on specific nights, he's ramping it up, but he's still passing well out of double teams and passing early and doing all those things that, you know, we as fans would like to see. But, I mean, on your point of Jason Kidd, looking at this week alone, he played 33 minutes in the game against the Clippers, had 3 points, 4 rebounds and 1 assist. And against the Raptors, he played 31 minutes, had 0 points, 4 rebounds and 2 assists. Now, obviously, there's way more to Jason Kidd than a stats line. And any Knicks fan would be able to tell you that. But his field goal percentage has been pretty poor. I think he was about 1 from 4 and none from 3, something like that. So it's a worry, and he's obviously been overplayed. I think he's tired. I think his back, he's had back spasm issues twice already this season, so it's not going away. And it's a real concern. He needs to refresh from this play throughout this All-Star break, come back in and be playing no more than 25 minutes a game for the rest of the season. I don't care what circumstances come up. He shouldn't be on the court. He needs to be out there and come playoff time and having the effect, like you said, that he had on this Knicks team, because I think both of us agree that he is probably the single most reason why the Knicks were moving the ball so well early on in the season.
Oh, absolutely. But didn't Woodson last week say, we want to play him, it's my fault, I've been playing him too much, and then he's played him the same amount of time since then?
Yeah, he definitely did. And I gave him a quick kudos for that, because I said it's good that he's taken the onus on. And yeah, it's disappointing to see that he's still playing over 30 minutes a game. I mean, look, circumstances call for it sometimes, but I think they really need to have a blanket rule that there are no circumstances that can call for it, because the Knicks are going to make the playoffs. I don't think that's a question, although when we get a chance to look further on into the season, I think it's going to be a pretty tough last month for them or so. But that's when they need him. They need him in the dying minutes of the game. And, yeah, they need him out there to really help run that offense, because without him in the offseason, I definitely could far from guarantee success. Postseason, I should say, not offseason.
Yeah, it's going to be difficult and interesting, that's for sure. The thing is, in Woodson's defense, who else is he going to put out there? Ronnie Brewer doesn't get it done. Prigioni plays, he's a pest on defense. He pesters people. He's like a gnat or a fly at night, a mosquito buzzing by your ear. But he can't play 30 minutes a game either. And the other kid they have, James White, they don't seem to even want to use him. So what is he going to do? He has to do that. And the thing about Kidd, though, is, you know, while his stat line is less than impressive currently, he still does the little things well. You know, he gets in the passing lane and he disrupts passes inside in the lane itself. He's always coming up with a steal toward the end of the game that's always valuable. But goodness, 25 minutes might even be too much. And then Shumpert, he hasn't done what people thought he would do either. People were jumping up and down, shouting out, "Oh, Shumpert's coming back. We're going to be okay." And I kept telling people, don't count on anything from him. You know, he still doesn't have his complete mobility, I'm sure. It takes almost 2 years for that to really heal itself. So what else does Woodson do? And that's the problem. The other issue, though, is the defense. And more people are starting to see for themselves that maybe I'm not as crazy as you thought. Because that jump switch defense does not work for the New York Knicks, does it?
No, it definitely doesn't. And I think with the starting lineup of Raymond Felton, Iman Shumpert, and Jason Kidd, and then Carmelo Anthony even, you've got a lot of guys who are undersized in their position, which is going to put an even more of a strain on the defensive end. And then you look at that jump switch and guys are just getting moved out of position. I mean, look, at times it's okay depending on who the matchups are, but it is occurring way too much. And it really has occurred too much all season, I think, apart from really probably the first month of the season when the Knicks roster was really energetic on the defensive end. It's probably struggled. And just on the defensive end alone, I can reel off a couple of things from the Clippers game. In the fourth quarter, the Clippers went 12 of 21 from the field, and had 8 of 9, scored 8 from 9 points in the paint. So, yeah, that defense is really struggling there. And a lot of the time, Tyson Chandler isn't back in the paint to stop those field goals because he's had to jump switch out onto either one of the guards.
Yeah, those are good observations. You know, the other thing about the Clippers game that was startling to me is that they had 5 turnovers in the first 6 minutes of the game. I mean, I've seen them play this year where they didn't have 5 turnovers in the entire ball game. And they're not taking care of the ball like they were either. Those are those little things that make the difference. You know, but this defense is awful. Really, it is. You know, when you want to play the switch, we called it in my day the jump switch. It's the same thing. It's the Indiana defense. That's how Indiana University played, and Woodson was a star there. You know, Woodson, people write to me and they say, "Hey, I'm finally seeing what you're saying about Woodson. He doesn't know anything about basketball." I never said that. Never intimated it. You know, here's a guy who led the LA Clippers in scoring 2 years in a row, the only 2 years that he played for the Clippers. See, I can go back and let you know. This kid was amazing in college. But the thing is that what this switch has done is you have to be able to play 48 minutes to do that, to accomplish what Mike Woodson wants to accomplish defensively. And this team just isn't athletic enough to do it. They don't have the stamina to do it. And all this switching probably has a lot to do with why Jason Kidd is struggling offensively. His legs just aren't there for a shot. You can see it when the ball goes up. You know, he's shooting all arms and all wrists and all fingers. He needs his legs to make those shots, and he doesn't have that. A lot of it has to do with the style of defense. This is why I say the things I say about Mike Woodson, Brent, because he doesn't seem to want to change that. He's got this issue. He knows it's an issue. He has to know it's an issue. He's a defensive genius. If he was coaching, say, the Washington Wizards or perhaps the Toronto Raptors, perhaps I would even go as far as to say the Cleveland Cavaliers, they would be awesome because those are young teams that can get it done. Houston Rockets would be another. This is a team that's the oldest team in the NBA. And all that switching just kills them. And that's where it hurts on the defensive end. And you've seen them sputter in their last 10 games. They're 6-4. But they shouldn't be 6-4 in their last 10 games. They should be 8-2, perhaps 7-3. But not 6-4. And it's all boils down to, if you're only going to play defense for 24 minutes a game, you better play that defense in the fourth quarter. And as you pointed out, they didn't against the Clippers, did they?
No, they definitely didn't. And I suppose a lot of Knicks fans have probably become accustomed to them being able to switch that on in the fourth quarter. But against good teams, it's just not going to be possible. And while we're on that, I suppose we have to give a quick props to the old boy Grant Hill, because he came on I think Melo had over 40 points, 42 points in that game against the Clippers, and only two of those points were in the fourth quarter, and that was when Grant Hill came out, went up and just basically went at Carmelo one-on-one, and it was a really good matchup and a really good battle to see. Unfortunately, Carmelo didn't come out on top. A lot of that, I believe, was because he was tired, possibly from some of the defensive stuff that we've seen, and also because they seem to be relying on him so much right now in terms of the minutes he's playing and what he's having to do on the offensive end. And one thing I still will say about guys not having their legs under them, definitely Jason Kidd couldn't agree more. J.R. Smith is another one. I mean, he was shooting had an unbelievable field goal percentage in respect of his career this season, and all of a sudden it's dropped. I think it's either under or just on 40% from the field, and it's under 35% from the three-point line, which is definitely disappointing considering where he started in the first, 2 months of the season, I would say. So, look, there's some issues there. It's hurting them on the offensive end. Offense comes from good defense, and right now that's not really happening. The Knicks can turn it on every now and then, but unfortunately, as you say, they don't have the energy to do it. And Iman Shumpert, a guy who probably I will say I was relying to bring in some energy, I wasn't expecting anything else than that, is also struggling. He started and went straight to Chris Paul the other night, and he just doesn't have that lateral movement yet. And, you know, we can't say anything negative about the guy because he physically and mentally can't do it yet, and we as fans shouldn't expect him to do it. And I don't think it was a good move by the coaching staff to put that to him yet. Look, it's great to challenge a guy, but do you really think you should challenge him on arguably the best point guard in the league? Probably not the best idea, in my opinion, anyway.
Yeah, maybe not. You're probably right. You know, the thing about that Clippers game, too, it was a track meet. And that's exactly what you have to do. That's how you beat the Knicks. You get them running, and that's what they did. The Clips, Vinny Del Negro. You know, it's interesting that in Clipperland, they were calling for his head, and now they're ready to put a statue up. That's that fickleness in the fan base. Every fan, team's fans, has that because you want to see your team win every night. I understand that. But Vinny Del Negro coached a really good ball game against the Knicks. And you're right, Grant Hill, goodness gracious, he took care of business. He really did. He still can play, man. You know what? And Vinny uses him correctly. You see the difference? And how players fit into teams. Vinny Del Negro uses his bench better than Mike Woodson uses his. And it's just the way it is. Nothing's going to happen to Mike Woodson. He's not going anywhere. He's the fastest coach to 50 wins in Knick history, I think. But still in all, the defense is in trouble. And then the Toronto game. People were writing to me, man. And they said, ha ha, you lost to the Raptors. And I'm thinking to myself, do you know anything about basketball, you empty-headed tool?
Yeah, I got the exact same thing.
It's just stupid. Because we thought last week, Andy Flint and I dissected that trade, the Rudy Gay trade. Maybe it was 2 weeks ago. I don't remember because we do so many shows and talk so much sports here. I forget sometimes what day we did what. But and one of the things that Andy and I both tried to point out is this. DeMar DeRozan probably is the happiest kid in Toronto. He benefited more than anyone from that Rudy Gay trade because now he doesn't have to defend the best wing player on the other team. He's had more energy to shoot. And you saw what he did. And that freaking dunk he laid down, I don't remember who it was, who he dunked on, but good grief, he murdered him. And Rudy Gay is having the time of his life. I told you, he was going to love playing in White Vegas. And he does. You can see that he loves being there. There's no pressure there. And it's no crime to lose to the Toronto Raptors now. They have a decent little thing there, I think. Don't they?
Yeah, they're exciting. They're fast. We've spoken about the Knicks' struggles against, you know, these guards that run around and are quick. And I saw a matchup coming ahead with Lowry and DeRozan and Rudy Gay, and I went, you know, this is going to be a tough game, and it was. But they've got something going there. The only thing that worries me is maybe contracts and how much money they've got to spend, but they're certainly going to be an exciting team, and they, I think all three teams did well out of that trade. But, they're exciting, and they've got some good young talent, and they're not too bad on the defensive end too, which is also – a good thing for any team, really.
And that damn JR, you know, I have him on my fantasy team, and he's been struggling, as you know. And I had that one extra player, you know, you know how it is. You have that one guy that is available to play, and you have to make a choice. And I take JR out of the starting lineup, and I put him on the bench. And then he goes and hits, what did he score, 26, 28 points?
Yeah, 26 points.
Goodness gracious.
Never can tell with these guys, Phil, but we can't hate. We cannot hate.
Oh, I'm not hating on him at all. I'm happy that he did it. But he hasn't been very consistent. And I think a lot of it has to do with the Amari Stoudemire return. And I'm not picking on Amari because he's been doing fantastic, actually. I'm impressed with the way he's trying to play defense. More importantly, I'm impressed with his ability to still go to the cup because he still can. And that's necessary for the Knicks. Believe me, he's doing all right. I'm not going to put him up at the Sixth Man of the Year award because he's not the sixth man on the Knicks team. J.R. Smith is still the sixth man on the Knicks. He plays more minutes than Amari, too. He's the man. But goodness gracious, there's no, in my opinion now, the chemistry is not the same since Amari's come back. Do you notice that, or am I way off base? Or
No. I completely agree. And one thing that I've proposed and been completely shut down on a number of times, and call me crazy, is I've said that the Knicks should be putting J.R. Smith on the block and seeing what they can get for him, because in my opinion, and I know that many others believe, that this is the best season that he's had in his career. And I've always been of the belief that a team can only have one sixth man. Now, you're saying that's J.R. Smith. That's fair enough. But I think really what a sixth man is a guy that's going to come off the bench, provide instant offense. The offense is almost going to revolve around him. He's going to bring that energy. He's going to bring all of that. And I think history has shown us, and now recent history with the Knicks, I don't think that two guys can have big impacts off the bench for a team. So, look, you try and figure out which one you want more. J.R. Smith was playing great before Amari Stoudemire came back, but I think it's going to be a lot harder to deal Amari Stoudemire. I know you've spoken about repeatedly a deal with the Lakers, including Steve Novak, and, yeah, that would definitely be great. But I think it's worth at least the Knicks seeing what they can get for J.R. Smith right now, purely because if they could get a really good defensive guard in, that'd be great because they need to win this year. And if they have every intention of keeping Amari coming in off the bench, which I assume that they do, then I just don't think that they can coexist. And I think it's hurting their chemistry.
Hey, I'm on board with you. I was thinking this last night. I was drinking a couple beers, being a little silly. But I was thinking that last night. I don't want to trade Amari now. I would have been stupid to do that. That's why I'm not the general manager of the basketball team, by the way. But only the general manager of my fantasy team, and I keep it at that. I'm not qualified to be speaking about these things like that. But here's the thing. J.R. Smith would fetch something, but here's the problem, Brent, is that his reputation isn't very good in the league. And I don't know what you can fetch for him, but he would be the one that you might be able to package off with Iman Shumpert for someone. Now, there's a rumor flying around that you brought up to me that the Knicks are interested in Luke Ridenour. What's that story? And why would they need another point guard?
Yeah, look, the only thing I can think really is safety. Also, the versatility of Jason Kidd, really being able to come on the floor and play three positions, probably doesn't worry them too much that they've got these point guards. And realistically, it's not going to bother them if Prigioni doesn't get any court time. And, I mean, look, he's exciting, but it's not going to bother me either. Ridenour is great. The talk is Brewer plus one. Now, who that plus one is obviously highly debatable and questionable. I know that Copeland's name's been brought up, but I can't see the Wolves being too interested in him. So I really don't know where this goes from here, but I know that the Knicks are interested, and I know that Ridenour is on the block. So who knows what can happen from here. I mean, look, it'd be great to probably get rid of Brewer at the moment, but whether J.R. Smith has worked into a trade with them, I don't really know. What I do know is that Luke Ridenour is a very versatile and a very good player, and if injuries occur, he can step up, he can play the one, he can play the two. And the only reason I can think is that because they've got that versatility with guys that can play multiple positions, they're thinking, okay, when Iman Shumpert's back and healthy, he can play two or in some cases three positions. Same with Jason Kidd and all those guys. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens here with the trades and with the New York Knicks. I know Carmelo Anthony's come out and said, I love this team, I love the team chemistry, and if it ain't broke, don't fix it, which I understand, but they need to win a championship. Are they ready to do that right now? I'm not too convinced. I think I think the potential's there, but I think adding another piece or making a change would be good.
Yep, I agree with you. But I don't know what they're going to do. They have three more days to do it. And I'm not so sure they're going to pull the trigger. I don't know. You know, the trade thing this year has been bizarre because there's so many rumors. I don't know if I would go for a point guard or another guard. I would look for a number four, a four who can come in and start. That's what I would look for. And that would give a big presence next to Tyson Chandler, the way Camby was playing with him. You know, somebody like that. And I don't know if they're going to try to do that either. But it should be interesting. And this week, the Knicks play the Pacers, the Raptors, and the 76ers. Quickly, how many wins do you think they're going to win this week? What are they going to do this week?
I think they're going to come back strong, and I think they have to come back strong, but they've got some tough games, and I'm going to say 2 from 3. I think they'll drop the game against the Pacers. I think their defense, and we've seen defensive teams hurt them in the past, and I wouldn't be surprised to see it again because I don't think that there's any quick fix to that right now. So I'm going to go 2 for 3 with a loss to the Pacers. Hopefully it's a tough game. If they come out on top, that's great, but I'm not expecting too much against the number one defensive team in the league.
I see them losing all three because each one of those teams have fast guards, and that's the Achilles heel of the New York Knicks, but I hope that I'm wrong. I think they'll all be close games, but I hope I'm wrong. Brent, thank you so much for being on the show with me today.
Yeah, no worries. Phil, always fun, mate. I enjoy it. Thank you very much for having me on.
Oh, my pleasure. We'll see you next week. And you can find Brent Kitchen at breakingthebackboards.com. Coming up next, Mrs. Debbie Wilson will be here to discuss her true crime memoir, Sweet Scent of Justice. And we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Phil Nascent Show on these amazing affiliates. And we'll be right back.
Stitcher Smart Radio is an award-winning, free mobile application that lets you listen to your favorite shows and discover the best of news, entertainment, and sports on demand. Now you don't even need a Wi-Fi or a cell connection to listen to shows like The Phil Nascent Show. Never miss another show. It's real simple. Just go to Stitcher.com and download the free app today. And never miss another Phil Nascent Show. Been dreaming of that Greek vacation? Well, if you have, then you might want to check out the folks at the Aridi Grand Hotel, located in beautiful Corfu, Greece. Come experience world-class cuisine as well as the hospitality that Greece is legendary for at the Aridi Grand Hotel. You can find them at aridihotel.com or email them at reservations@aridihotel.com. This Week in Tennis is a weekly tennis program covering all aspects of professional tennis. The most controversial tennis show anywhere deals with issues no one seems to want to touch. For music and hard-hitting commentary, please visit philnasons.com. Hi, this is Phil Nasons from The Phil Nasons Show and This Week in Tennis. When I'm looking for sports information, my first stop, as well as yours should be, sports-kings.com. Great information, scores, highlights, and exceptional commentary. You can find it all there at sports-kings.com. DraftKings.com.
Welcome back to the Monday, February 18th edition of the Phil Nason Show. My next guest, after receiving many questions from her daughters about their Aunt Kathy's brutal murder, she decided after 23 years to find out what really happened to her sister. And her amazing, faith-based, true crime memoir, Sweet Scent of Justice, chronicles her search for justice. Please welcome author Mrs. Debbie Wilson to the Phil Nason Show. Debbie, how you doing? Welcome to the jungle.
Hi, Phil. I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing really well. This is like our encore performance of the show, eh?
Yes.
Technology is a beautiful thing. You know, I'm in Greece and you're in Louisiana, and we get to talk like we're next door to each other. But sometimes these things have glitches. Unbelievable. This computer thing is nuts. You know, I did a show, a complete show with my friend Jamian. A complete show. And it was 4 in the morning here in my time. And the recorder didn't work.
Oh, my goodness.
It was not horrible. Good. Not good. Anyway, take us back to the last day that you saw your sister Kathy.
Okay, sure. It was the afternoon of April the 3rd, 1981. I was a high school senior, and Kathy was a sophomore in college. And that afternoon, she had come home from work because she had planned on staying with some girls where she worked. She was going to stay with them overnight. And so when she got ready to leave work, she realized that she had left most of her clothes at home that she needed. So she came back to where we lived, and she decided to get all of her things there and just get ready at the house. So the last night that I saw her, she was getting ready upstairs, and I was getting ready downstairs. And we were together talking, and as we always did as sisters, we borrowed each other's clothes. And unfortunately, the last time I really spoke to her, we were arguing over a belt that she wanted to wear and I wanted to wear. And so she was not exactly happy that I got my way. I got to keep the belt, and she walked out the door, got into her little car, and that was the last time that I saw her.
Yeah, that's something. And you didn't have any regrets about the way things worked out with your sister that last day, do you?
I did. When I was young, I really did. I really felt guilty about it. But just knowing how much she loved me and how much I loved her, it was just a sister thing. We never stayed mad at each other ever, but arguing over clothes or belts, we did do that a lot.
Well, that's what sisters do, right?
That's correct.
Because boys, we fight over baseball bats and baseball gloves and skateboards. Hey, that's mine. No, I want to use it today. You know, but it's all good because we don't carry it over. You know, it's part of being a sibling.
That's right.
Just normal. Anyway, prior to deciding to find out what really happened to your sister, was your faith ever shaken, or did you ever question why God would allow something like this to happen to your sister?
I had led an almost perfect life up until that point. Perfect by having a family that really cared about me. We were very close, grandparents that loved me, and we never had any major problems in my home. It was what I would call at the time the Brady Bunch house. We never had any issues, but when Kathy died, then that was so tragic that I did question God as to why that would have to happen to Kathy, because she was such a sweet person, and she I just didn't understand why that would have to happen to her and why it would happen to my family, because we tried to obey God. We tried to do the things that he wanted us to do. We were very faithful to him. And I guess I felt like maybe he was not being faithful to us in the beginning. But I did question why that happened.
I think that's normal.
I do too.
I think that you have to do that. You question your father sometimes, correct? I mean, your earthly father. I mean, and this would be your heavenly father. Why wouldn't you question and wonder, what kind of wisdom are you using? You know, we always think we're smarter than our dads.
Right. But they know best.
Usually, yeah. Usually they do.
That's
right. Sure they do. But do you ever wonder, and we're going to take you moving forward in the book, do you ever wonder why Kathy's ex-boyfriend told the police that he had sex with her when he didn't?
I did wonder about that. I knew my sister's strong feelings about premarital sex. I knew that she would have told me if she was having premarital sex. And I, even when looking back through her diary, it was very evident that she was saving herself for marriage. And so I didn't understand when the detective told me that he had been with her the night that she died and the night before she died. And so I question as to whether maybe the detective just got his facts wrong because it had been so long since it had happened. And he was giving me all the facts really by memory when he was talking to me. And then, two, I think that maybe her boyfriend was very, very young at the time, and he's told me that they questioned him for hours and hours, and so he might have told them anything just so that they would let him go.
And that makes sense, too, because he was a young fella. He'd probably never been in trouble with the law, and all of a sudden he has these men standing over him demanding to... Or trying to convince him that he's the killer. And so I could see him doing that. You know, you see it every day. Now, the skeptic would say, when they read your book, that the only reason that you're happy, because you do talk in your book about God answering your prayers, and you do it very modestly but very emphatically, that this is actually what happens. God answers your prayers. What would you say to the skeptic who would say, well, Debbie's only happy because she gets what she wants?
Well, I do believe that God answers all my prayers. I believe, though, that it's not always yes. Sometimes his answer is no. When my father had cancer and we really prayed so hard that God would heal his body, but that was not within God's will. And so he doesn't always answer my prayers with yes. Sometimes he answers by just telling me that I'm going to have to wait. And we did wait. We waited over 20 years until finally we had some justice for Kathy. So as we were talking about earlier, I really feel like God is my Heavenly Father, and he knows what's best. He knows what's within his will. And so I'm so thankful that he answered with yes that time. But I also understand when he answers with no.
That was well said, by the way. Well said. You in your book, and this is what really riveted me to this, because you decided after all those years, at the prodding of your daughters, to find out what happened. And you went up in the attic, and then you started reading microfilm newspaper columns that you had never seen before. What was that like to read these brutal details about what happened to your sister? Because you didn't know, really, did you?
No, I really didn't know, and it was extremely difficult. I can remember sitting there beside the box that I had opened, and I was reading article after article, and all of those feelings that I had in 1981 just started sweeping over me again. It was just like opening up the past, and those memories just kept flooding through. And so it was extremely difficult to have to read through that, but I knew that it was something I had to do. I had to read those things. I had to do more research in the library. because I had to find out every single detail if I was going to be able to look into her cold case.
And you definitely did. Because if it wasn't for you, that guy would still be out in the streets, maybe.
I truly believe he would be.
Sure. And I enjoyed, it was really interesting how they wound up putting him into prison forever. I thought the prosecutors were clever. I mean, you have
very
to
get, clever.
But we won't give that away. But I have to ask you this. Were you surprised when it was revealed who the killer was? Because I thought, and I said this on the previous taping that got botched, but I honestly thought that the killer was the person that your grandma identified when she came to the house and discovered that her granddaughter had been murdered.
And I thought the very same thing for so long. So I was very surprised. I was surprised that he was still so close, within miles, to where he abducted her. It was a shocker. It really was a shocker for all of us.
Yeah, it shocked me too, because like I said, I was 100% sure that your grandma was right.
I know.
Because that's usually whatever, but you all have to read the book to find out that. But anyway, take us back to that day, though, when the man who police believed Kathy, or who killed your sister Kathy, was finally apprehended. What was that like for you?
It was wonderful. It was a day of celebration. It was a day that I just really didn't think would ever come. I was so overwhelmed with thankfulness that I couldn't help but thank God out loud. And I was in the middle of a store in the mall, and I really could not hold back how thankful I was that God had worked through so many different miracles, things that we were just all shocked that things were still there that we were able to use to find out who killed her. So I was very, very thrilled and just excited.
I was excited too, because I would jumped out of my bed. I was pretty fucked up for you. Because your book is amazing. It took you through all these steps and these highs and lows. And I have to, I'm going to ask you this on the Writer Showcase podcast as well, but were there ever times when you thought maybe this case would never get solved?
Oh, definitely. I can remember one of the worst times. We had ruled out a couple of people that we really thought might have done it, and I can remember just sinking into this very dark valley that I thought I might not ever climb out of. But that at that time, I can honestly say that that's when I felt the closest to God, because I knew He was there with me, and He began to give me a peace that even if we didn't find her killer, that peace would still be in my heart always. So it's the only way to describe that peace is just that it's indescribable. It's something that's there that helps you to get through things.
Yeah, that was definitely the impression that I received from this book. Now, I asked you this before, earlier today, and now I'll ask you this again. And I'm just laughing at myself and how stupid I can be sometimes. But describe, please do this for me, because I was trying to picture in my mind, because I didn't see, I couldn't put a face on your mom, really. And I was trying to think about what she looked like, the look on her face, because your father had passed away in the time leading up to this decision of yours to find out what really happened to your sister. What was the look on your mom's face when they finally put the guy who brutally murdered her baby daughter in prison for life? What was the look on her face?
It was a look of relief. She had such relief on her face, relief that it was over, relief that this person would no longer be able to have a hold over our family. And that this person would never be able to hurt anyone else's family or anyone else's daughter. So I think that that's the best word to use to describe that look. It was just a sense of relief.
That's fair enough. That's fair enough. I'll tell you what, your family's amazing because the reaction your father had at the funeral, I wouldn't have done that. If somebody would have done that to my daughters, oh boy, I know what I would do. It wouldn't be thanking God for her life. It'd be praying to God that I don't catch the guy.
You know? Right. I know. He was truly a wonderful, godly example for my whole family. Just a man of faith.
Yeah, absolutely. I picked up completely from your book. Now, I ask every author who comes on the show to give us three reasons why we should buy their books. So why should we buy Sweet Scent of Justice?
I think one reason would be because it's a fascinating story. It's a story that will just keep your attention until you reach the end because some of the details are nothing short of miraculous. And so a fascinating story. And then I think it offers encouragement to others. I know that it does. I've received so many emails and letters from people that who tell me that the book has given them some special type of encouragement, some things that I would have never dreamed that reading the book would give someone. But so I've been encouraged by reading those emails and letters. But just by reading what my family went through and the faith that we had through it all, I hope that that's a blessing to others. And then if you're a true crime reader, the third thing would be that if you enjoy true crime, you're going to like this book because it will keep you captivated until the very end. And I can honestly say that people who read it tell me that they don't put it down until they finish it.
I'm guilty as charged. I knew I had to read it quickly because of how fast this whole process of meeting you and bringing you on the show would take place. But it wasn't right. Because it was a duty. I really enjoyed reading your book, I have to tell you. What's next for you?
Well, recently I had the opportunity to go to New York City, and I had the opportunity to be interviewed by Paula Zahn for her show that's called On the Case with Paula Zahn, and it's on the ID channel, Investigation Discovery Channel. And so I'm looking forward to seeing that show. It's going to be an hour-long show where my book, the story from my book, will be told. And then those who want to watch, well, we will have interviews with detectives as well as my family. So I'm looking forward to that just so that people can share. I can share this story with people on a national level. So I'm very excited about that. And also, I'm going to different churches speaking and different book clubs. I never say no when someone asks me to speak because I believe that God gave us a gift by giving us some justice for my sister. So I feel like I can definitely do that for him. So I enjoy speaking to groups, and so I look forward to doing a lot of that in the future.
That's excellent, but can I ask you something?
Sure.
I've been asking you questions all morning, but will you please write another cold case crime thriller?
I'll think about that. I never really intended to be an author, but I have always enjoyed true crime, and I'm a true crime buff, really. I enjoy watching those shows, and I've always enjoyed reading mystery books, so who knows what might be in the future.
Yeah, I like 48 Hours. That's my favorite show, 48 Hours Mystery. I have to obtain it through interesting ways, but I watch it every week when it comes out. Debbie, thank you so much for being on the show and braving the jungle with us.
Thank you.
It's my pleasure. And folks, if you want to buy an amazing book that chronicles Debbie's search for the killer of her older sister, Kathy, then this book is for you. It's faith-based. but it's not oversaturated with faith. And I have to tell you, when you question this lady's Christianity, read her book, read what happened, what she did at the end of that book, and you won't question it. I guarantee you, you won't. There'll be my review of this book, as well as links to the Amazon site where you can purchase this book, and I suggest strongly that you do. And that's going to wrap it up for today's Phil Nason Show. Special thanks to my guest, Brent Kitchen from BreakingTheBackboards.com, and Mrs. Debbie Wilson for braving the jungle with us. Tomorrow night, Damian Smith will be here. Wednesday, Andy Flint. Thursday, Damian comes back again for his normal spot. And on Friday, we'll be talking crazy baseball stuff, Atlanta Braves baseball, in fact. Until then, you all take care of yourselves out there. Be good to one another. Good night. And most importantly, thank you for listening.
Ladies and gentlemen, my mother thanks you. My father thanks you. My sister thanks you. And I thank you.